Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and friends, I cannot wait for you to listen to this interview I did with best-selling horror author Grady Hendrix. You know I love a good horror novel, and Grady Hendrix has written so many of my favorites, from Horror Store to My Best Friend's Exorcism, The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, and now his newest one, The Final Girl Support Group. You've heard me gush about him on the podcast before. Now, listen to us basically become best friends over the course of the next half hour as we discuss our favorite slasher franchises, why we love a final girl, what it's like adapting a novel into a film, and so much more. Buckle up, folks. This is a fun one. Hi, Grady Hendrix. How are you?
I am doing well and happy to be here. Wait, so where's the bookstore?
We are in Concord, New Hampshire.
Oh, right. You know, New Hampshire's one of the, I'm from the South. And so New Hampshire's okay. One of those mystery states to me, like Delaware. I'm never quite sure what goes on there.
Not much. we are, you know, probably most famous for being close to Boston. Like that's, you know, our claim to fame.
But wait, do y'all have anything? Like I know New Jersey has the Jersey Devil. Do y'all have anything?
I don't think so. I wish we did.
Okay.
I don't
think New York's got Cropsey. Like,
yeah. I don't think we have any cryptoids. I would love some, but no, I think, unless there was something specific that destroyed the old man of the mountain, I don't think we have anything. But yeah, so up here in New Hampshire, just chilling. It's funny, I realized this morning. So between the ARC, the final copy, and the audiobook, I have three different editions of the Final Girl Support Group. And then with all of the other books of yours that I own, I accidentally created Grady Hendrix Shrine on my bookshelf.
Oh, wow. No, here's the thing. If you just put a candle in front of it and make sure it never goes out or I will melt. So
it's my new altar.
Exactly. Just literally just one human sacrifice every 6 months. It's good to rock. Yeah,
easy.
Ready to go. Easy peasy.
I could do that. Just any problem customers, I'll just lure them back and, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. If there's not one person you want to murder every 6 months, I don't know what kind of optimal life you're living.
Right? I want that life. So tell our listeners who haven't had the pleasure yet of reading the Final Girl Support Group, give us the elevator pitch. What's it about?
So final girls are just the women who survive a horror movie. And I always wondered kind of what happened next. And I assumed it was a lot of therapy. And so these are women who survived a horror encounter, a summer camp slaying, a school slaying, a prom night slaying, a family of redneck mutant cannibals. And they've survived and they've earned a support group sort of dealing with this because you think about that and you're like, wow, how do you live the rest of your life in the shadow of this horrible thing that killed all your friends that happened when you were like 16 years old? And the book starts when they've been in the support group for almost 20 years. And some of them are starting to feel like, you know, why are we still obsessed with something that happened to us in high school? And they're starting to drift apart and then they begin to die one by one. And so that's sort of how things kick off.
Yeah. Things progress from there.
Rapidly in a downward trajectory.
Rapidly, yes. I realized today I was looking at your website and I listened to the audiobook of this because Libra FM partners with indie bookstores. They send us advanced listening copies. So I actually got to listen to it. I did not realize that Adrian King, who reads the audiobook, is Adrian King of Friday the 13th.
I know. Isn't that wild?
What? That's so cool. How did that happen?
This is a crazy story. So about 40 years ago, and this is, you know, you're like, oh God, help me. But when I was a kid, I couldn't watch R-rated movies. I just wasn't allowed. And I'm from South Carolina. We do stuff like that. And so I was a loser. And so I would read about them and pretend I'd seen them. So I'd read like the comic book adaptation of Alien, or I'd read the Mad Magazine adaptation, like parody of Jaws. And like, you had to be careful with that because that really played fast and loose with the facts. And I didn't want to be caught not having seen these movies. And so after Cub Scout meetings, we would go to the Oasis gas station and buy snacks. And I convinced my scoutmaster that books were good. And so I was allowed to buy magazines with my snack money. And so I, you know, could get smarter. And so I bought Fangoria. And the first issue I bought, and I think I only got away with it once, was April 1981. And they had a whole story about the opening of Friday the 13th Part 2, which begins with Adrienne King, the final girl in Part 1, hanging out, just chilling in her apartment, normal like Wednesday night in some crummy upstate town. And all of a sudden, Jason murders her. And I was always like, holy cow. She survived all this terrible stuff in the first movie. And they just knock her off like it's nothing in the second. I'm like, this is a terrible existence. And I always wanted to sort of write her a happier ending. So that was when I first sort of got this Final Girl thing in my head. And so cut to 40 years later, I finished Final Girl Support Group. A friend of mine, Ted Gagan, who I'd done some movies with, he knows Adrienne. So he gave me her address and I sent her a copy of the book. And one of the characters is named Adrienne after her. And I was really nervous and she loved it and was like so generous about it. And so we were talking and she's like, you know, I would love to narrate the audiobook. Or actually, no, yeah, I think she said that. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, why not? And so she and I had to jump through some hoops to make it happen. But yeah, she narrates the audiobook. And so it was a really nice way to close the circle. It had started this 8-year-old kid looking at this woman getting knocked off and wishing he could do right by her, to 40 years later being able to do right by her. It was a really nice present.
That is so cool. That is so cool. I am, of the franchises, I am a Jason girl. That is
me too.
That is my franchise. I wondered because there's a lot of Camp Red Lake. I was like, I wonder if he's a Friday the 13th.
There's movies from the other franchises I like a lot. Like, you know, I really love Halloween H2O because it's such a great ending for Jamie Lee Curtis and for Laurie Strode and Michael Myers, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then they just undo it in the following movie because you can't stop the franchise. And I love Nightmare on Elm Street 4 just because I think Alice Johnson is such a great final girl. And her brother fights Freddy in a dream in a dojo with karate and he almost wins. But the Halloween movies are so grim. Like it's like Mustafa Akkad was like, I want no jokes, no jokes. And with the Nightmare movies, like sometimes you just want to be like Freddy, just shut up, man. Like use your inside voice, just take it down to like a 6. And I find the Friday movies hit right in the middle for me. Like you've got genuinely terrifying ones, like Part 2, which I think is a legit scary movie.
Yeah.
And then you've got stuff like 4 or 6, which are just so much fun. And so, and then you've got like the really goofball entries that are, you know, like 8, which is goofy in its own way, which I enjoy. So I settle out on Friday.
I love it. Yeah. It was the first franchise that I watched all of them. I think that's why it stuck. And I was in like high school and I bought like a box set of the DVDs and I just sat there and watched all of them.
And did you start at 1 and go all the way through? And did you do the Paramount 8? So you did the 8 and then you stopped or did you keep going?
I kept going. I had 2 box sets. I had the 8 and then there was like 3. There was like a box set of 3 and then And then like the Jared Padalecki one came out like a year later. So then I watched that. So I have a few sets. And so that was, to me, like Jason just has a special place in my heart for that. But you're so right. Like when I watch the other ones, like I love all of the franchises. I find so much to love about them. But you're right. It's like with, you know, Halloween, it's just intense. There is no levity there that Jason has some levity and with Freddy, it's like, okay, buddy, I get it. But I love them.
Well, it's also funny because like the Halloween movies, like Michael, you know, he'll crush your skull, he'll stab you with a butcher knife, or he'll pick you up and hang you on something.
Right.
And I'm like, and I admire the commitment. Like, you know, you got your tricks at work and you stick to them. But like, and Nightmare on Elm Street, it's like, oh yeah, he turns you into a roach. He, you know, like, it's kind of ridiculous stuff. You turn into pizza. Jason works with real world stuff, but he's always just finding new creative ways to kill people. And I'm like, you know, you really do think outside the box. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. My favorite horror movie kill of all time is the sleeping bag against the tree. Just whack.
I know.
It's great.
It's so angry.
It is such a satisfying crunch.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, the thing with the Friday movies is like you get such a wide assortment of final girls. Like you get final boys like Tommy Jarvis. Yeah. You just really, they play all the notes on the piano in that franchise.
It's so true. So Jason is your favorite franchise. Do you have a favorite final girl? I mean, maybe Adrian.
Well, Adrian, yes. But also my favorite final girl in general, though, is Alice from Nightmare 4 and 5.
Oh, nice.
She gets such a great arc. You know, she just shows, starts out as the enabling daughter to an alcoholic dad, and she's all mousy. And then she like winds up being such a badass. And like that movie has so much creative stuff in it, the time loop, the chick getting turned into the roach. Like, and there's something really extra squicky about Freddy. I don't know if it's because like the movies happen in people's dreams when they're in their pajamas and in bed, but they're very sexualized in a way that like the Friday movies, the Halloween movies are not. The knife hand coming up between Heather Langenkamp's legs in the first one, him licking her face. Freddy's always erupting out of people. And, you know, and then Alice gets pregnant with like the Freddy baby and she goes through so much and she gets a great gearing up scene. Like, no, she's, I love Alice Johnson.
That is such a good answer. It's funny. My friends have a horror podcast, which I have to recommend your horror podcast to them. But one of them, he is a huge Nightmare fan. And I feel like he's really going to appreciate that answer because he's been gunning for a reboot or, you know, in the way that they brought back Jamie Lee Curtis. He's like, we can do this. Come on.
Absolutely. Well, also though, I have to say, you know, I just rewatched Slumber Party Massacre with a bunch of people and the clothes in that are fabulous, but I have to say my number one clothes horse final girl, Olivia Hussey in Black Christmas, man, she rocks that preppy sweater and her sweater game is on point. It is so good.
That's amazing. Oh, I love that. Okay. Let's see. So we've talked about our favorite final girls. What is it about the final girl trope? I was talking to Riley Sager last week about this as well, because he also has written some final girl books. What is it about the final girl trope that we love so much? Because I love it too. What is it? What is it about the final girls that we love?
Well, there's two things, I think. One is it is a really primal story. I mean, it's Red Riding Hood. It's Bluebeard. It is a woman going, who's seemingly defenseless, going up against someone who way outmatches her physically and having to survive or not. And that is a story we've been seeing forever and telling and retelling forever. And I think the thing I love about it so much is that they survive. And they don't survive because they're strong. They don't survive because they've, you know, got good cardio. They don't survive because they're smart even or follow the rules. They don't survive for any other reason than they don't give up. And, you know, there's so many times in these movies where it's like, they could just stop. They could just stop and give up and they don't. And it's kind of like that old joke, you know, how do you stay married for a long time? You just don't get divorced. It's like, how do you keep on going even when the worst things ever are happening to you? You just keep going. And that to me is so comforting that we can do it. You can do it. You can survive anything. The only thing you have to do, the literal only thing you have to do, is not stop.
Yeah. It's so inspirational.
Yeah, totally. It really is. You know, final girls are really inside. And I feel like, you know, slashers, that sort of template, even though slasher movies are cheesy and corny and nostalgic and all this stuff, like, dude, that is life. We are running and banging on doors and locking doors behind us and hiding because there is someone very slowly coming after us and he is going to kill us eventually with a ridiculous, you know, humiliating way. And that's how we're going to go. And we can't, even if we survive this movie, there's a sequel tomorrow when the sun comes up and we might not survive that one. And so, you know, the final girls are like my spirit animal.
I love that. I love that. So across your books, you've written so many different genres of horror, right? You've done the paranormal, you've done the possession, you've done the slasher. What do you have a favorite to write?
No, I just love doing it. I love figuring things out that people have forgotten about and trying to make them scary again. Things that have become campy or accepted or sort of like they're cutesy, like vampires. Like when I first doing Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, my publisher's like, dude, I don't know, man. I cannot get sales and marketing on board with a vampire book. Like, no one wants that. And I was like, come on. And with this, I think people think they know Final Girls and they're corny and cheesy and all that stuff. And I really wanted to do something new with them. I mean, my next book's a little different. It's about evil puppets. And I feel like there's not enough evil puppet books. Turns out the puppets just misunderstood. But, you know, it's so that one's a little off, but there used to be a fair amount of evil doll and evil puppet books. So, you know, I'm just bringing back a trend.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And did I see that, is Horror Store being adapted? Did I see that?
That is what I'm doing right now. I am writing the screenplay for Horror Store. The people who did, not the director, but the producers who did Black Swan and 1917, optioned it. And so I'm writing the screenplay, and I gotta say, I am really irritated at whatever hack wrote this book because they make my life so hard. I wish I could punch them.
Which part is the hardest?
The hardest part is that books are relentlessly interior. You're always inside someone's head, and movies are totally exterior. You cannot show someone thinking in a movie. You can show them scratching their head. You can show them looking at something, but you can't show them thinking. And so figuring out like the climax of Horror Story, the big turning point in Horror Story is when Amy gets sort of captured and tied to a chair and sort of has this dark night of the soul about her wasted life and kind of gives up. Yeah. How the hell do I show that in a movie? You know, it's like, so I'm a little miffed.
You got to just have her monologuing at herself.
Yeah, exactly.
just thinking out loud. I actually read Horror Store in one sitting yesterday, just because I was like, well, I've read everything else. Let's read Horror Store. and so then when I saw that it was, you're working on the adaptation, I was like, oh, good.
Yeah, no, it's sticking to the book, but it's been a pain in my butt.
I can imagine, but it is going to be so cool visually. I'm so excited.
It'll be really fun. Yeah. They have a lot of really cool ideas for it. And also, you know what? There need to be more. I'm tired of movies where people have these vague, ambiguous jobs. They work in an office or like people who work retail, man, they're out there on the front lines. Valhalla awaits for those who work retail.
Yep. I love it. That is so exciting. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks. I need
it. Best of luck.
I'm working with this awful author. I need luck.
He's got all these demands. He's such a diva.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, are you, other than, you know, writing your screenplay, are you reading anything good right now? Have you read anything good recently? You want to recommend?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I instead of doing normal author events, I do these sort of like one person shows. And so once I wrap up a book, I do a ton of research for the show that goes with it, which is why I did that podcast, because I was going to do the vampire show. And then, you know, we had a pandemic and I had to stay home. Yeah. I'm doing a lot of these virtually, but starting to do live ones. And they're all on my website on the events page. But I'm doing a show about murder books. And so I've been reading a lot of murder books. And there are some great ones out there. I mean, I just read, what was that one that was really phenomenal? Oyinkin Braithwaite wrote this book called My Sister, the Serial Killer. It's from 2018.
Yes.
And it is, I don't need more serial killer books in my life. Like, I feel I'm a little serial killered out, but this thing is so funny and so good. And it's quick. I mean, I read it in like 3 hours. And
yeah, it's short. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, if P.G. Woodhouse was Nigerian and cared about the inner lives of women, he would have written something like this. It is a hilariously great book. And what was the other one I read that was so good? I just drew a blank. But yeah, Oyinkin Braithwaite. Oh, yeah, I just read this book from 1949 by Dorothy Hughes called In a Lonely Place, which is about a guy. It's about this sort of like, he was this combat pilot from World War II with the fabulously made up name Dix Steele. It's like, it's like, not since Peter O'Toole has there been a better fake, a more phallic fake name. And he's like drifting around LA, and the book's from his point of view, and he's just sort of like missing the thrill of combat, and he's just kind of like at loose ends. And then halfway through the book, you realize that he's been murdering people. And like, he's so dead inside, you don't even realize that's what he's been doing. And then you're like, oh my God. It's really fantastic. And Dorothy Hughes doesn't get enough credit. She's a really phenomenal author. So that was another one that really rocked my world.
That sounds amazing.
And then, you know, one book that sort of got forgotten is back in the 90s, Sherman Alexie wrote a book called Indian Killer that is a really, really good serial killer book. It's wild. And it just sort of got forgotten. It sold really well at the time and then sort of vanished. And I'm like, American Psycho gets all this credit and stuff like that. And this book is in that vein, but so much better, I hate to say. Nice. So it's really weird that it's fallen off the radar.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to look. I haven't read that one yet. I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, it's great.
Awesome. Well, Grady, I know you have a bunch of interviews today, so I won't. I could keep you all day and just keep gushing at your books, but I won't.
It'd be good for my ego, though.
I'll just keep inflating your ego, yeah. And I'll light some more candles on my Hendrix altar. And
listen, the candles are nice, but seriously, just one human sacrifice every 6 months, biannual.
I got you.
I asked for very, very little.
Very little. Super easy. No problem. I live in the woods. No one's going to find me.
People are in the woods. People practically murder themselves.
I literally bought my house from a cult, so we're fine.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What cult? Are you able to say?
It's not a well-known one. It is okay. A very sort of, they were down south. They moved up. They relocated to New Hampshire, and to this area. There's a mountain behind my house that is called the Pinnacle, that is supposedly the exact geographic center of New England or something. They thought it was a very special spot, and the sort of leader of this quote unquote religion moved a bunch of people up there, and then he died, and they sold all the houses. And I bought one.
Oh, so it's like there were several houses on the property?
Yeah, there's in the area. So not like a commune. They're not like close together, but mm-hmm. he moved his followers from down south up to New Hampshire.
Was there anything weird in the house that you found or just a normal house?
Well, in the room that is now my children's room, there were really like deep gouges in the door. There was a hole in the ceiling. There were black marks all over the rugs and walls. There was also a closet that was just locked. We assume it was probably a gun closet, but it was just locked. We couldn't get into it during the tour. There was like a basically an altar to the leader of this religion on the landing of one of our stairs. Yeah, it was.
Wow, but that altar is great because you just take his picture off and put mine up
and put yours there, and yeah. We're good to go.
Wow, that is wild, dude. You really buried the lead on this interview.
I know. But you know, my husband's really into like feng shui and stuff. So he like cleansed the house and it's all happy vibes now. And we have a mountain in our backyard. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's great. And a really good backstory.
And a really good story. And they still have like a church. They still have like church services up there and stuff like that. So
are they nice people?
They're super nice. With them? Yeah. They're super nice. Yeah, they're super nice. They never pressured us to join or anything.
I think that's a first good step.
Yeah. No, they're like, oh yeah, you're welcome anytime, but like no pressure. And they're very sweet and although they don't mind hand, that we go hiking up there. And
on the other hand, I feel like that's a terrible cult. Like, I mean, you know, yeah. Shouldn't they be pressuring you to join?
Well, the guy who kind of runs it now, right before the pandemic, kept traveling to Russia to recruit people. So that was a thing that was happening.
Ouch.
I know. Oh, I was like, oh, buddy. Ooh, I don't know.
Not
I don't
a good
know.
Look.
I don't know if we want to be doing that. Okay.
Recruiting people.
Recruiting people. Yeah. So yeah, there's that.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Because I'm actually one thing in my book that I'm writing for next year right now has a cult in it that lives in backwoods New England in Vermont. And yeah. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to know that I'm not too far off.
You're not. You're super spot on. If you need any any stories, you know where to find me. Awesome. Well, Grady, congrats on Final Girl Support Group. I can't wait to hand sell it to everyone. I'm so excited for this book. It is incredible.
It is music to my ears when a bookseller says that, because that is what really counts in this business, is booksellers and librarians recommending books. You guys
absolutely.
Have You guys have all the power. Like, so thank you very
much.
You
are so welcome. No, it's incredible. So thank you so much for chatting with me, and best of luck on the rest of your virtual tour.
Dude, thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Grady Hendrix for coming on the podcast. What a delight. The Final Girl Support Group is out now and is on our shelves along with all of Grady's other incredible books. Also, if you want to listen to Adrienne King read it, you can snag that from Libre FM. If you don't have a membership yet, now is a great time to start one. Use the code LAYDOWN at checkout for 2 extra credits. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!